Today on the show, we have someone who works with some of the biggest names in the world of football. The man helping athletes reach peak physical condition. He's not just an elite strength and conditioning coach. The guy has built his brand from the ground up, rising to global recognition. He's trained the likes of Karim Benzema, Antonio Rudiger, Renato Sanchez, Jesse Lingard, Alphonso Davies, and many more. So we usually have our discussions between sets while training. We never sit down and talk about stuff. So Coach Nick, known as the Power Coach, welcome to JMP Podcast.
Thank you.
It's good to have you. We've been friends for like almost 3 to 4 years now. I'm actually happy to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, man.
So we're going to start in the beginning. What made you want to pursue a career in strength and conditioning? I know a bit of your background, not a lot. So take me through the journey and how you became the famous Coach Nick.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how things happen. Like for me, like, so I'm older, right? I'm older than most of you guys. I'm 38 now. So back in the day, when I was in high school, there was no real things as like personal trainers, not so much strength conditioning coach like we have now. I remember actually when I was finishing high school, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I did an internship with a physio. So I thought I wanted to be a physio, to be honest. And my mom, I remember one time when I was maybe 18 or something, she told me about these people. They start paying other people to coach them in the gym. And I thought it was the weirdest thing, you know, like who would pay someone for? So I tried to get into physio. Basically, to be honest, I didn't have the grades. So back in Canada, it was very similar program to kinesiology, which is like sports science.
Okay.
And then I went to kinesiology because I managed to get in from the grades and because of my track, you know, running track, I got a sort of a scholarship. And then I went into kinesiology hoping that if I have good enough grades, I can transfer to physio. But to be honest, once I started doing sports science, I figured like this is the thing for me. This is actually what I prefer, you know, so I just stuck to it. And so I was, that was like 20 years ago.
Wow. So you just said you have an athletic background.
Yeah.
So I know a bit about that, but basically, what type of sports were you playing previously? And do you think it had an impact in choosing like your career path?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So I've always been obsessed with anything speed, explosive, power, all that stuff.
Used to sprint.
I did sprints for over 10 years. That was my main sport. I did football, everything where you have to run. So football until I was 18. I played ice hockey. I played American football. So for a couple of years, ultimate frisbee, anything where you have to be quick, I was good at. So it was, you know, I was like the fastest guy at my high school, the captain for the track team and all that stuff. So I was always obsessed with that. And I always, genetically, I didn't have, you know, I'm half Asian. I wasn't going to be like a Usain Bolt or anything, but I was the fastest in my high school. I made it to the track team in university and stuff. And I was always right up there, but never good enough in the end, you know, to become the elite. But then I compensated with my hard work. That's actually, I think it's a lot of good coaches, I think they learn because they're actually not the most genetically gifted. Sure. So they have to, if you're obsessed like I became, you have to find a way. So, you know, for the track team in New York, for example, we were training 5-6 days a week. And then on the weekend, I would be training with myself. So I would do some research and like, what else would I need to work on? And I was a bit obsessed, you know, I would go at 5 or 6 in the morning before the track was open. There was any security. I would go with my bike, throw my bike over the fence, do the extra laps, like all that stuff. So it taught me a lot, but I've always wanted to be just the quickest, and I think I'm still decent.
yeah, we've seen your sprints back at champs. Do you think? I think most of us athletes who were good athletes tend to go for this type of career path because we want to stay in the sports. We're not the most elite athletes. We're good athletes, but at the same time, we want to like test the waters with that.
Yeah.
I remember we spoke a bit when we were in the gym. You had a couple of hamstring injuries, if I'm not mistaken. Does this have to do with a bit why you went through kinesiology or no?
Originally, no. But then why I became, let's say, a full-time trainer, yes. So, you know, I went to university. I was 18. I started studying this. And then I started, after my first year of university, I think I was 19, I started working as a trainer. Part-time like this just to make a bit of money, and then I just started, you know, from the age of 17 or 18 I started getting a lot of injuries. So hip flexors was the main one at the end for the last 2 years, and then hamstrings, everything, I had everything. And it became like, you know, very taxing, very stressful. And in the end, I was like, yeah, it was too much. So when I stopped running track, competing in track and field, I decided to focus all my energy on training people and helping other people that basically didn't get the, you know, that could still have the chance to make it, you know, whether it's in sprints or any professional sports. Yeah. And that's been my focus for the past 20 years, is to basically give the opportunity. Because back when I was young, you know, I didn't know what a physio was.
Back when I was young,
No, but for example, when I got my first bad injury, I didn't know what a physio was, you know, when I was 17 or something. And so I didn't go to a clinic, I didn't go to the physio. So I let it heal by itself, which actually messed up all the scar tissue was. And then from there, it was a bit downhill. When I finally did see a physio, then they tried to fix it, but one leg was stronger and, you know, for sprints.
You compensate, for sure.
Yeah, so I was never the same. And I had no idea how to train properly. It was my high school phys ed teacher that was telling me, but, you know, he wasn't the most qualified. So so now I try, you know, I see those young guys that are hungry like I was. They want to make it and they're ready to do whatever it takes. So I, you know, now my passion is to help these guys to make it to the best of their ability.
We always say to younger athletes that you guys are lucky that you have this opportunity right now. Because I'm not going to say back in the days, I'm a bit younger. But we didn't have this exposure when we were young. Mm-hmm. So I do believe, because I share the same passion as you, so I do believe we want to empower these people to get to the best physical condition possible for them to actually achieve some of their dreams. So talking about dreams, when you were young, did you imagine you would actually train the names that you've trained?
No.
So you trained like crazy names. Like we can mention names from today until tomorrow. It's crazy. So did you imagine that you would do that?
No. If I step back and I look at the last 20 years, how it's been going. No, of course, I wouldn't have imagined. It was always a dream, you know, especially when I started working as a trainer when I was 19. We had some professional ice hockey players at the gym and stuff, and American football players. So I got lucky to be able to talk to them, to help out the coaches and stuff with them. But I don't think I imagined it. Also, because in Canada, where I was, there wasn't as many big athletes, you know. Like, you have to be at the right place at the right time. Also, Dubai is this also right now. So there was never, you know, all these Real Madrid players and Premier League players and Champions League players coming to Montreal. So I never could have thought of that, you know.
That's the main reason why you came to Dubai?
No, but it worked out well in the end.
So I've mentioned in the intro that you've built your brand, SPS Performance, which was Dubai Athletic Performance previously, from the ground up. Now, whenever people see your page, see the players you've trained, like you were known for Coach Nick training these type of players, but this didn't start this way.
No.
You literally built it from the ground up. Take me a bit through this process.
Yeah, so it's a long process. Yeah, so
of course. Sorry to interrupt, because most actually coaches now, they think they can do things very, things can come to them in a very easy way. Mm. They don't know the amount of work you need to put in to actually be able to train this caliber of players or these names.
Yeah. No, exactly. There's a lot of, like in any business study, there was a lot of process of hits, fails, and mostly fails, and, you know, learning process and all that. You know, I think you have to be lucky. You have to work hard and seize the chances when they come. So, for example, working as a trainer when I was 19, I got a chance to work at one of the best gyms in Canada. At 19 years old, everybody else was 30, all the other trainers. And just because one of my family friends knew the owner of that gym, he said, bring your CV. And I got lucky. They were looking for someone specialized in sprints. So I started working there, and I got to be exposed to high-level athletes fairly young. I wasn't the one training them, but I was able to shadow the guys who were training them.
Of course.
So I was, you know, learning a lot from them, still techniques that I use nowadays. And one of the main things that I realized from then is, you know, some of those trainers were very good trainers, 30, 35, 40 years old. But to be honest, nobody really knew who they were also. So that's when I realized to be a successful trainer is not just the training, to have the masters, the doctorates, to all that stuff. You have to know your stuff, obviously. You have to know the science. You have, I believe you have to know how to apply it also. So you have to live it. You have to train it. You have to, you know, before you give it to your clients.
Practice what you preach.
Yeah. And then the last thing also is the business, the marketing, the branding, all that stuff that a lot of people don't want to do. A lot of trainers just say, no, I don't like to do social media. I don't like to do that. But it's 2025. Back then, still 20 years ago, it was becoming, there wasn't social media and stuff yet. Well, there was Facebook, but I realized that the marketing, the networking was, you know, a huge aspect in if you want to make it, and now more than ever.
I definitely agree, because you see a lot of coaches who target one part of the spectrum. They don't know, like, this is actually, being a PT, you have, in a way, your own business.
Mm-hmm.
You have your clients. Definitely education is part of it. But you need to know how to brand yourself. You need to know how to sell. Let your work do the selling, for sure. But you have all types of things that you need to cover to be able to build the brand and also become a successful trainer, which I think a lot of people lack, because personally, I think they don't like to get out of that comfort zone.
Yeah.
I remember once you told me, if I'm not mistaken, that you actually waited for a player. A player was coming here. You actually waited for a car maybe at 11 p.m. or 10 p.m. You told me a story. I can't remember it quite frankly. But how much hard work have you put in to be able to build a brand this way?
I think you know also, you've built something really good also so far.
Yeah, thankfully.
You have to be so hungry. And I found the people around me also now, you know, with SEC VIP also and stuff, we're in the same boat. We always say no one's going to beat us because no one works as hard as us.
Yeah.
So they might get lucky, you know, have some people they know this and that. But at the end of the day, no one's out there putting in as much work. Oh, yeah, I think you're talking about the meeting that I had. They messaged me like 20 minutes before.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was with the agent of big players and this and that. And I was dead tired. And this is like pretty recent. This is maybe 2 months ago. So some people could say, like, you know, I've already made it. I don't need to do that extra work. But, you know, I find it's important that you always stay hungry. And for me, what's, you know, been a big thing in my life is when I was younger, these things you learn, a lot of values I find you learn from sports, competitive sports and stuff. And I've always been competitive. And one of the things that I've learned is it's okay for me to lose a game or to lose a race or something, but if I lost because the other person worked harder than me, this I could never live with myself. I would regret it forever after. So I was like, never again do I want to lose because the other person worked harder than me. So if there's any chance that I can do the work, you know, I don't know.
Because you need to compensate in some way. Like if you're not, let's say, that talented or whatever,
exactly,
you're good, you need to compensate by doing something else, which I believe is hard work.
And even as a trainer, I don't think I'm the most, let's say, gifted or the best trainer or whatever, but I try to make up for it with working harder. And people look at it and they think, oh, it looks easy, but there's a lot of times, I think.
Or 5 a.m.
Yeah. There's another story. One player, who's a good friend of mine now, he used to play at Arsenal, a legend. And one time his friend was going to introduce me and this is like maybe...
I think that was
the one. Yeah, I think. Yeah. This is maybe six years ago, maybe, or something like that, 5-6 years ago. And he told me, oh yeah, he's at the mall with me and stuff. It was like, around 11 p.m. or midnight. And I was in the car waiting outside for him to give me the green light and say, like, you know, come and I'll introduce you. And in the end, didn't work out. And I was just sitting there again. And those are the things that, people don't see that. But at the end of the day, you know, it's like anything. You'll probably fail at 9 tries. And then the one time that it works out makes it all worth it. So
I definitely agree with that. Because like we said previously, most of the people want it easy. But you can fail once, twice, three times, as long as you literally don't give up and you keep pushing. You might get one opportunity that can change your life. So the Power Coach, where did that name come from?
The name actually came, it's my friend. So I don't know if you know Dave LeDuc. He's a Lethway, you know, how do you call it, bare knuckle champion and stuff. a good friend of mine, French Canadian guy, and he was in Dubai. We trained him for a fight and stuff, and he's very good with branding and stuff like this, you know. So he just came up with this, like, oh yeah, that's sick. I was like, oh, actually, that works well, yeah. Because my whole thing, a bit like SPS, is about speed, power, and strength. And power and speed, you know. But power is basically the mix of speed and strength. So power is key in all the sports. If you have that, you know, that's what changes speed and power. Explosive, the first couple steps, the little fraction of a second is what's going to make the difference at the end. You know, the guy who gets the header by this much or is this much in front of the other guy, touches the ball, the other guy gets a foul or whatever it is. It's always about, you know, seconds or inches.
No, I agree. And how do you apply this in your training philosophy? Like, you're known for being the power coach, and we've seen you train explosiveness, speed, and everything related to that. How important do you think this type of training is for football players? Because as we know, and we all know, that a lot of players don't actually like the gym session or the gym work. So, but now we're seeing they're being more aware how important it is for longevity, for having a longer career, mm-hmm. to be able to perform at a high level. So how important do you think that is as part of a training regimen for football players?
So football is a funny one, because coming from North America, obviously, I think the strength conditioning is a lot more ahead, you know, in American football, ice hockey, basketball, all these things. I think the science is, let's say, they're a bit ahead, a bit more advanced. In football, I think because it's the biggest sport in the world, it's a bit more old school in a lot of countries. And because of that, the way they train, yeah, is a bit more old school. So, there's a lot of football players, probably most of them, that still get scared of going to the gym because they think they're going to get big or because they're going to get slow or tight. And we're talking about like top players that played Real Madrid for 10 years that think like that. And it's mind-boggling for me but that's how it is. So for me, coming from North America with this background and speed and power, it was just perfect match. Because when they do my kind of training in the gym or on the track or on the pitch, they feel faster, and they feel, okay, it's not that I'm actually just doing bodybuilding and getting bigger and pumped. I'm actually, my nervous system, my muscles, I can move quicker and stuff, and then they can see the difference on the pitch, you know. So in general, and I don't know what the percentage is, but I'd say probably 85-90% of the football players, they need to get stronger, they need to train properly in the gym.
Like, sometimes you look at some players on the football pitch, they're crazy, they're fast, they're crazy skilled. Then you see them do like some basic movements in the gym and you're surprised, like, yeah. How? So imagine the room they have to actually improve even more and the capabilities they will have later.
Yeah, that's the thing. We can see that because we know a bit more the science and stuff for sports science, but a lot of football players will look at this and then they would argue with us that it's not true. Oh, this guy's the best in the world and this and that. Yeah, okay, but we can see, like, physiologically, we look at the biomechanics and stuff and we say he could be even better.
Yeah.
And like, I even yesterday I was talking with some football players, they look at some kids training in the gym, they're like, oh no, they're not supposed to do that, because it's like very old school, they think. And I say, look, if the guy can run faster, he can be stronger, more coordinated and all that in the gym, and he's good with the ball, then you have a winning formula. But they think because you do gym work, you won't be as good with the ball. It's not one or the other. You know, I was telling him, if you get a Brazilian guy with the culture, the street culture, he's playing football every day, and then he goes to the gym an hour every day, man, this guy's going to be a machine. You can't beat him, you know?
Like, when I think of hard work, when I think of dedication and skills, in my head, the name Cristiano Ronaldo pops up. Like, the guy is 40 years old. He's still performing at an elite level, of course, a bit less than before. But we both know how much he trains inside the weight room. So do you think the new generation of athletes put more emphasis on strength and conditioning compared to before?
Yeah, 100%. Ronaldo's definitely made a big influence on that.
You actually trained his kid.
I trained his kid, yeah. And his kid also works really hard. If there's one thing that's really good that Cristiano did, is that he's taught his son about hard work and all that stuff. So it should be interesting to see how he goes in next years. But yeah, definitely, the fact that Cristiano was training like that, a lot of people have it's opened their eyes a little bit, but still, because it's a bit also like an outlier, people think, oh, that's because he's genetic freak or because he's a freak, like he's the exception. But actually, no, he's just showing us the formula how to become that freak, yeah, you know, true. Like he wasn't always like that. So, but a lot of people are starting to realize, agents and stuff, you know, they're reaching out, they're saying, you know, we want you to take care of our players for this and that to improve performance. They're starting to understand also, if you take care of your body like Cristiano did, you have a longer career also. Instead of finishing at 32, you can play till 42. That's a lot of money that you can leave on the table if you don't take it seriously, you know?
Now you said 42. I read an article that the goal of Cristiano is to actually play in Al Nassr, is to play with his son.
Yeah.
So how cool would that be?
Yeah. He's just renewed now, so why not? $200 million a year. We'll see.
It's nice. So we've talked about some elite athletes. We all know that mainly during international breaks, you have a lot of players coming in. Do you think it's hard for you to actually prepare a program, periodize? You know, you can't periodize when you have 2 or 3 weeks. Do you think it's harder for you to train these type of people because you need to be aware that they're going to go and compete again? You need to make sure they don't get injured. You need to take all the factors into consideration. Is it harder for you to manage that?
Yeah, you know, again, I think the most important is that you know the science first. So, you know, I did a Bachelor of Science many years ago, 4 years. So I think I understand most of how the body works for this. And then you have to adapt. You have to, you know, if you look at the beginning of the session when I train a player, I'm asking a lot of questions. I get them on the treadmill and I'm asking them a lot of questions. How did you sleep? What you've been doing the last couple of days? Do you do a lot of gym? What kind of gym do you do? All this stuff, how you eat, all that stuff. And then I have a plan before they come, but then I'm like, oh, okay, so he's actually been injured. He's coming back from an injury or he's doing this or whatever it is. And then we tweak things. And at the end of the day, like now I have sort of my little formula, you know, we have to play it safe also. So the first session, very often I tell them, look, you're probably not going to be that sore. Sometimes they are very sore because they don't know how to activate their glutes properly and all these things, but they're not dangerous things. But you know, for example, if we do sprints and stuff, we're not going to do a 40 meter on the first time, you know, like we can't risk any of that. So it'll be some short stuff. Anyways, it works out well because with us also, they want to improve the shorter distances and the power and stuff. But again, just because most of them need to get stronger, it's usually you get the most bang for your buck by working on strength and actually not going that heavy, but just teaching them how to do it properly and which muscles to work and that. And, you know, with the nervous system, if you teach your body how to do the movements properly, which muscles to coordinate together and all that stuff, then already you're like, oh god,
also
you're like, yeah, I'm so much quicker. Well, no, now you're just using your glutes a bit more, a bit more, you know. So, yeah.
Do you think educating the players about that plays a big role? Because, you know, most players want to feel that they're smashed during the session. Mm-hmm. And it's a topic I've spoken about before, even like the DOMS, the soreness. Most of them feel they didn't do an actual workout unless they got sore. Mm. Do you usually educate your players, explain to them you don't necessarily need to get sore to get the benefits that you need to get, especially if it's someone that's new with you or starting a session with you?
You know, it's a funny one. So some players, obviously, they ask a lot of questions and they want to know how everything works. But other guys, now, I think when I first started my career, there was a bit more of that. Now, because of where I'm at and because of the people I've worked with, people come to me and they just like, they trust me. Yeah. So they know, like, you know, I don't need to tell them, oh yeah, it's okay that you didn't get sore. It's still working and stuff. They know that my programs work because the top people come to me. So they're like, and that's a funny one also, like with the psychology, I can give them the same program that I made some players do 20 years ago, but they'll get better results now because they'll be pushing more because, you know, they commit to it more. So, yeah, that's another part of the training that's interesting. But, yeah, in general, I don't need to do too much of that. They know I know my stuff. They trust me. Their friends have told them to train with me. They've seen on social media. Their agents told them and all that stuff. So they push hard. And then, yeah, you don't always need, but yeah, I do communicate a lot also. So, you know, I explain to them. I communicate to them, you know, today we have, you know, we're not going to do this much. You're not going to be necessarily that sore, or okay, tomorrow you're going to feel your glutes. And then they...
Yeah, because most of them actually train with you and do football skills too. So you also need to take that into consideration. Yeah. Now I'm going to go a bit into a subject talking about injuries. Especially now lately also in the NBA, you have a lot of Achilles tendon injuries. As SNC coaches, we can't prevent injuries. Mm. Like what we can help with is load management. We play it safe, like you said before. Do you think a lot of coaches tend to push their athletes and not be conscious about all the other parameters just to showcase that I know my stuff, I know what I'm doing, I want to prove to them something?
Sometimes I see some players, they come to Dubai because their friend knows this trainer, they go to them and the guy just destroys them or makes them do a bodybuilding workout or a CrossFit workout.
That's unfortunate, man. Like still nowadays,
people,
yeah, we have trainers doing that. It's crazy.
But it's part of the game. I think when you focus on doing the best that you can, and that's why we've been so successful, is a lot of word of mouth, you know?
Yeah.
Like a lot of players, they come back after many years and then their friends are coming after 3-4 years to Dubai and they refer them and stuff. But now I think nowadays with social media, people get excited, you know, either that, they try to destroy them. It's good, obviously, you have, if they need to do conditioning, you make them do conditioning also. I do, because of that also, I do very often add a little finisher at the end of the session so that the guys feel like, oh, okay, wow, that was a good workout, you know?
Yeah.
But
this is smart, by the way, just playing it smart for them to get that feeling, but playing it safe.
It depends, again, like if they've just, you know, they've done the football session in the morning with our guys also, I'm not going to destroy them. So it depends. And I explained that to them also. Okay, like you've already done a lot of running this morning, so we're not going to do too much. Nowadays also with social media, a lot of trainers get excited and just want to showcase some moves that they've seen online. That doesn't make any sense. It looks athletic, but it looks. Yeah, no, but it could be actually, you know how it is, like the movement, the exercise itself might be... I never find one is good or bad. Sure. It just depends on how you put them together and the reasoning behind it. So one day, you know, people will look at, let's say, LeBron doing the quarter squats. Oh, yeah, it's not going as to grass. Da, da, da.
Yeah, but you don't know. He has a hip injury. Yeah.
That, or you don't know what time of the season, or is it before a game, or is it what is it like? What is it for? You can't judge just from one clip, you know?
Yeah.
But so there's a lot of behind the scenes that goes
And like you said, in choosing whatever exercise you want to choose, intent is everything.
Yeah.
Like as long as you know why you're choosing this exercise, why you're doing this, why you're doing that, and you're playing it safe with your athlete, you'll be doing your job. We spoke a bit about the athletes you've trained. Is there any athlete specifically that you're like, okay, this guy surprised me by being explosive, or let's say lifting heavy or being so strong inside the weight room?
Yeah. The first time that happened, I'd say, was Alistair Overeem, you know, the UFC heavyweight. I, for a guy his size, to see him jump and move like that, I was really impressed. And for football players, I think the best athlete I've trained is Benjamin Sesko from Leipzig, who might be going to the Premier League this summer.
Awesome.
He, for a guy his size, again, how he was jumping and moving and stuff, it was really impressive.
Which also transfers, like you can see it actually on the football pitch.
He's flying.
Yeah.
Anytime he scores a goal, if you look at his jump, it doesn't make any sense, man.
So. Especially being like having this size.
Yeah.
It's amazing. We've spoken a bit about the SPS brand that you've built along the way. How important is the team behind the scenes? Like, you know, Coach Nick is the name that usually elite athletes link themselves to. So they contact you, they speak with you. But how important is the entire team that you have, whether it's the team for marketing, whether it's SEC VIP with Nabil, the football coaches like Yahya, etc. How important is the team for you to be able to... have a bigger brand name?
Yeah, now it's becoming more and more about SPS. It's like doing a transition, but I think without the team, all of this is not possible, 100%. you know, SCC VIP also, they were the first ones that said to trust me maybe 9 years ago. We've been working together for a long time.
Can you explain about SCC VIP a bit?
Yeah.
Because I don't think, yeah.
So basically, yeah, it goes back. So basically, you know, when I was in Canada, I used to work with some athletes. I knew what I could do. I knew what I could bring him. And then in Dubai also, the first years I was there, I moved to Dubai here when I was 25. The first 3-4 years, I worked with some athletes, but not internationally renowned athletes. And I saw the results they were getting. But then, like we said, it's how do you get it out there? And then I looked at, you know, the most successful celebrity trainers or SNC coaches in the world, let's say in New York, in LA, in Miami. And what makes them stand out is that, you know, oh, they train these professional athletes or they train those actors and stuff. And then I looked at the workouts that they make them do, and it's actually super basic. I was like, it's not because of the workouts that they're there, you know, it's because they know the right people and stuff. So then I made I made a list of all the people that I knew in Dubai who knew how to, who knew pro athletes or celebrities and stuff. I met with all of them and told them what I could bring to the table, if they need physio, if they need training, healthy food. I know all the people, I can arrange for them. All 12 of them told me, yeah, for sure, we'll send you people, we'll do business together. Blah, blah. Nobody sent me anything. And then I remember that I met through Benzema, this one guy, Nabil. So I got in touch with him. We met. He said, okay, let's give it a try. And these things, that's the thing people don't see. Yeah, those 12 meetings.
That's why I wanted you to explain about that. Yeah.
And then with Nabil also, I remember the first time actually, he's like, okay, I'm going on a boat with these couple players and stuff. And I went on the boat and I met them. But the guys just wanted to party and stuff. In the end, we didn't train, but I met the guys and stuff. Nothing much happened. Nabil was pushing. And then we had one player from the academy at Chelsea who was staying on the five. Back then, the five was brand new. There was nothing on the beach. And I went to train him for free at the five. The guy liked it. The next day, he came to my little studio in Alcoz. We trained there. He liked it. Then he told his friend. The next day, Jeffrey in Adelaide, who was at Arsenal back then, I was his friend. We went for dinner. He came to work out the next day. And then from there, we just, you know, it's just been growing. But so with Nabil, SCC VIP, we have very similar values. We understand that working as a team is going to make us reach much higher levels than doing everything by yourself. So I know a lot of trainers in the world, they're very good, but it's all about them.
True.
If you want to scale, if you want to do something, let's say a proper thing, you have to have the best team with you. And this is what with Nabil, with SCC VIP, and then with the people that I put around me for the pitch, like Yahya and all that, I'm trying to make, you know, SPS is the team of experts in everything. I know I don't have the best touch. I'm not the best guy for the football pitch. I believe I'm really good at what I do. And then for the concierge stuff, SCC VIP is the best at what they do. They've been also growing into the biggest concierge company in Dubai. We focus on delivering the best quality service, always professional, always do the right things. A lot of people, they try to become greedy. They try sneaky things and stuff. We believe Nabil also is a very good guy. So at the end of the day, we believe if we do good things for the people and we help them, it makes us happy. Obviously, we make money also. It's not about making huge money at that time. We have to pay the bills and stuff, but we do it the proper way. And this is why it's been growing the way it has with the team that we have.
Yeah, especially the last couple of years, like the name has been out there.
But this is many years in progress. It's like a bit of a, I always say like a snowstorm or something. Like it's coming. So it's becoming a snowball effect. So it's becoming like this. And now, you know, imagine each player that's coming is telling all their players and posting, and all the other players are coming and seeing. And so it's becoming like this, you know. But it's many years in progress where, you know, everything happens in the right time. But many years of us trying different things and seeing what works and what needs to be done the proper way and which people to work with and all that. Like it hasn't always been easy, you know. So now we're starting to get our things together properly. We're putting the right structure together. There's still a lot to be done, but we're on the right track.
You're learning along the way.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. Yeah, because it's never really been done before like this. Also, if you think about it, I took the concept, you know, of different trainers when I was younger. That I looked at which trainers were the most successful. I looked at what they each had, why they were so good at what they did, And then we're not reinventing the wheel. We're just trying to take the best of everybody, learn from them, and do our own mix in Dubai and see where it goes, you know?
Like you said, we're not reinventing the wheel. A lot of people have been through it. A lot of people have done it. Like, all you need to do, whether it's as an entrepreneur or as a trainer, is to actually follow the lead of the right people mm-hmm. who have already done it before you.
Yeah.
And you just need to put in the work. Yeah. Like, both of us are huge fans of Alex Hormozi.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you know, he helps you in his way grow your own business, which I believe is what you've been doing for the past couple of years. You've said like a sentence here that you've trained someone for free when you started. I actually did that too. Especially when we first come into Dubai or when we're training a big name. Right now, people pay a big amount for your session. You have now, you built your brand name, you have your value. How important do you think that is for us to be humble in the beginning, to do the work, like whatever the work that is, whether it's training someone in the end of Dubai, I don't know. Like, how important is that for you to be able to reach where you reach now?
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, I think Hormozi also talks about that a lot. Is it Gary Vee also?
Yeah.
But basically, yeah, it's about, you know, nowadays people are, I don't know if I'm old or what, but they're a bit too entitled, you know. They come out of university, they think, oh, okay, like I should be getting paid this much. I didn't mind when I was younger, as long as it didn't hurt me, you know, why not? Like, you have to prove yourself. Nobody knows. There's a lot of SNC coaches out there. Like, why you? Like, you have to find a way to stand out, man. You have to show what you can do. People focus too much on the short term, I think. You know, they see on social media, the online trainers, they're making all this money so young, so quick. But if you want to build something that's going to last, like a proper big thing, you really have to focus on the long term. And sometimes, you know...
You need to focus on the base, having a solid base.
And the base. And when you focus on the long term and on the base, you don't mind doing these free sessions at the beginning. I would still do it anyways. It's my passion. Like, if I get to work with, you know, with Benzema or like now we had Doku last month and stuff. Like, I watched him on TV and I'm a big fan. I went to see him live against Cesco actually. And I was like, damn, this guy's explosive. So when I get to meet him, and he's a great guy, I'm like, man, I would do this for free. And actually, I didn't charge that much considering I went to his hotel and stuff. But that's because I know how much it's going to bring back also. And we do a good job, then he's happy, he tells his friends and his teammates and all that. And I've had people before, for example, when I had Benzema one time, there's a physio, he didn't want to do the session for free. It was the first time I was like, come and do a massage for him. And he didn't want to do it free. He's like, yeah. And nobody knows who this guy is. I'm just like, no, I don't do things for free. He's like, okay. So then we get someone else.
Like, just for sure, you understand, you want to get the value of your time or whatever. But at some point, it's worth it.
Yeah. If you look at the long term, like, we got somebody else, and the other person never really worked with anybody big, but he worked with Benzema, and he have the freaking jersey on his wall at the clinic and pictures of Benzema. It's good for business. It's good for a lot of things, you know, recognition. But
you're actually meeting people you've watched on TV you actually admire, which is the case with me also. Like, I took a picture with Jimmy Butler, the NBA player, with Sadio Mane. Like, man. It's crazy.
So people they need to, you have to find the balance. Obviously, it's harder if you have bills to pay and stuff like that. But if you're able to, you know, if you look at the backup, you're like, what's the worst that can happen? If I do a session for free, you've lost a couple hours. Maybe they don't show up. It's happened before where you do it for free. I show up at the big player's house, and in the end, they're like, oh yeah, I'm stuck somewhere. Let's do tomorrow. And I'm like, man, on my day off, I just came out here for a couple hours. Blah blah. You want to tell him to like F off, but you know, like next time you're there, like, okay, it works out. And that's what people don't see, but still till now, until we've reached, let's say, the top level, there's always going to be a higher level anyways, but sure. You need to be humble enough to still do things for free and to still learn and to still try to progress like that, you know?
I'm talking about these things because these are things we face, I'm not going to say on a daily basis, but these are things most coaches face, but not everyone speaks about them like loudly the way we are, which is something I'm quite enjoying. Like, you have different, if you want, phases to becoming an elite strength and conditioning coach or even a PT. You have to go through these steps. there is no way that you can jump and reach. It might work for a month, for 2 months, but no way. If you don't have a good base, if you're not going through all the steps, if you're not networking with the right people, you don't have a good surrounding, you're going to reach a point where you're going to get stuck.
Yeah.
And you won't see, like, you won't go forward.
Yeah. That's the thing. I had, you know, around COVID time, my friend went all in on the online training, and I was also pushing for that. But then I was like, you know what, let me focus. I'm not, you know, I was able to have some big names. I could have said like, okay, I'm just going to milk that and just say I train all these names. But I knew I had to focus on getting even more names. So if I push now on the online training, it's 10 times bigger than it was during COVID. And it's still not where it's going to be. And anyways, I prefer that. So I'm just pushing on focusing on this. And then, you know, eventually when you want to do something, then it's too big to stop, you know?
Yeah. Having the SPS brand, I know eventually your goal is to open your own facility, which is, I think, the goal of every single strength and conditioning coach, if you're ambitious enough. Like, most of them like to get stuck. So you've been building your brand, you've been growing, etc. What is the next step for you? What's the next step for Coach Nick?
You know, let's see where it takes us. When the bigger you become, like in terms of the brand, the reputation, the network, the more opportunities there is. And very often you don't know from where it's going to come. You can't really plan. Our dream, obviously, one day would be to have the best facilities, I hope, in the world. Because of where we live, also because Dubai is booming like this, I think it's possible. It's definitely doable if we do things the right way. We're not in a rush. We want to do things properly. Right now, we have really good partners. We've been at Champs, you know, for many years, and without them, it wouldn't have been possible. So we want to keep working with them. You know, they're also expanding. We want to be part of that also with them. They have, I think, the best facilities for athletes in Dubai.
Talking about Champs, you know how before I met you personally, we'll talk a bit about that, but I'm like, whenever I used to see the stories of you training certain players, I'm like, who's this coach? Like, because I used to watch Premier League a lot. You had some names. I'm like, who's this coach? Who's this coach? Then with time, you saw me, how I train my people. You saw, let's say, my training structure. Then we got to meet, to talk, and we've been like friends ever since. So yeah, like it's mind blowing how these opportunities come out of nowhere.
And that was a bit scary also, no?
You're not like, when someone doesn't know you, you give the impression like you're a cold person when someone doesn't know you. But when someone gets to know you or gets a bit closer to you, no, you're quite okay.
No, it's funny because this week somebody at the gym also told me that. He's like, why are you so angry all the time? Yeah. I was like, no, man, I'm just working. I have things to do. I have things on my mind and stuff.
Yeah.
And I told Patty, and Patty was also saying, yeah, you're always looking so serious. And stuff. Like, when I go to, I've been in gyms for so long.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with going, making friends and chatting with people all day. But I know from my experience that I did that for many years.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, your own projects didn't move too much because all that time that you had to focus on your own projects, you spent it having a good time and socializing in the gym. So when I go to the gym, I go to work, I do my things, I do my workout, and then I'm out.
You socialize, but you socialize smartly.
Yeah.
Like we said before, for me, the network is everything, especially in a country like Dubai. I'm not the most social guy too, but I think part of our job is to actually socialize with the right people, because this is where the opportunities come up.
Yeah, and it becomes, you know, as you get older also, and you learn that one of the main things, the most important things is your time.
Yeah.
There's only so much time that you can have. So you focus your time and energy. You have to choose wisely what you use it on. And now, especially, you know, I have my family and stuff like that. So I don't want to be in the gym for 12 hours a day and then I don't have any time with my daughter. So if I'm in the gym, I do my things that I have to do. Yes, okay, sometimes, very often I enjoy it also. Like if I meet with you, we talk about things that I enjoy. And it's always also related to work in some way. Same with Nabil or other people like this. I enjoy it. And now it's for work, but it's also become like good friends, you know, but it's related. And then when I'm done with that, then I just want to go home and spend some time with my family, you know? So as you get older, you start to realize, you know, you have to be very picky. I don't have time to talk with everybody at the gym that just wants to chill there, you know?
Especially with the name you've built, like, you know, a lot of coaches would want to come talk to you, ask for opportunities, would want to work with you. Definitely when we started our career, we needed to put the 12, 14, 16 hours a day, the Johnny days. You know, this is part of it. But as you grow older, you, yes, you work hard, but you work a bit smarter. Like, you capitalize on every single hour or minute that you have during the day. Like you said, you have a family at the end of the day also you need to take care of. So speaking about that, what is an advice that you would give for young coaches? Because we were talking about the hard work we've been putting in for a while. We still do it for sure. But what's, if you want several advices you would give for young upcoming coaches who want to take their, if you want, their brand and become known or grow their personal training brand?
I think in any industry, I was speaking with one of my guys yesterday about that, like any industry, but especially from my own experience in this training industry, you have to be humble, you have to be open-minded, you have to always be hungry and to work hard, obviously, but to learn how to work the right way. There's a lot of people who've been there, done that before. You know, sometimes we have some guys like now, a social media guy, he came in and he wants to learn and he's following us, he's working hard and he's earning it. Other people, they come in, they're 24, they think, oh yeah, I know everything already. And you're like, man, you want to have a job like me? I'm almost 40, I've been doing this for 20 years. If you are actually smart, you would sit down next to me, take notes, ask me questions. And then, you know, it's like reading a book. Like you if you can get a mentor or someone who's been there or do an internship, that's, you'll learn 10 times faster. But that takes maybe a bit of humility. I don't know.
Ego.
Ego also to move aside. And so, yeah, definitely work, or like you, nothing is going to replace work, but obviously work in the right way. Not just like they teach you in school. In school, they teach you about the science, how to be a good trainer and stuff. But then there's a lot of good trainers that make a lot more money than you, and actually it's just because they're nice people.
Sure.
They don't know necessarily more about training, but they're nice people. So you have to know that to be a good trainer, to be successful, you have to know how to train, but you have to know how to be good with people. You have to know how to do the nowadays marketing, branding, business aspect, all that stuff. And this, we didn't learn any of this in university. I had to go on YouTube and read so many books. And yeah, I used to get up at 5 a.m. like you, and then go on all those YouTube videos, Gary V's and stuff, and take notes. And I had a plan. I still have the plan written down at home, like everything, like do all that work.
When we're saying the names, Hormozy, Gary V, etc., this is what some coaches don't understand. Like, this is how you develop your business side of personal training brand. Like, yes, your education, your, let's say, physical education is one aspect of it, but this is as important.
Yeah, I think the best combo is if you have both.
Yeah.
Like nowadays, you see on social media some trainers that never train anybody in person. They don't know what they're talking about, but they know how to play the online game and they're making a lot of money.
Yeah, true.
Then you have other guys, they know their stuff for training, top trainers in person, but then
they don't know how to develop the business.
Develop the business, and the thing is, they go together, because even, like I said, like, if you know, if I give the program now to the same program that I gave 20 years ago, the guy now will get better results. So that goes also with, as you get a bigger name, bigger brand and all that stuff, then also in person, actually the training, the people you're training will get better results because they adhere to it more, they're more into it. So it all helps, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, you have to learn everything about the business. It's not just one thing, yeah.
Like, the science is the science.
Yeah.
Like, whether we like it or not, the science is there. Yes, it's developing, even like the physics.
Yeah.
Even if it's developing, but you're not reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, exactly.
It's there. You just need to be smart and know how to manipulate everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So what, like, you're building your name, you're growing every year, your brand is growing even further. What do you want to be remembered for? Like, yes, you're training those top athletes, etc. But what's the legacy you'd like to keep?
You know, one of my personal projects would be, you know, I have a couple of young players that I think we can help them become the best in the world. I would love to be part of that project, but it's not always so easy with the scheduling and stuff to always be in the UK and that kind of stuff. Somebody actually, one of the young trainers asked me yesterday what my vision was. It's not, you know, Coach Nick, the brand is sort of a bit of a tool to get there. The proper thing is SPS to make it, you know, Aspire in Qatar, a bit like that. But I think just because of the fact Dubai is more interesting for most people, there's more things to do and all that. And we have the whole team, something similar to that in terms of the proper performance center, like we have a bit in the US and stuff. And I think we can become the biggest name, you know, a bit like Exos is for now, can become the biggest name for performance, training, recovery, everything like that in the world. Dubai would be the first one. We can be the, and then from there, you know, once we have the blueprint and the right structure, the right people, you know, this is going to take some time, obviously, but
for sure.
Once we have that, that's what I would like to leave is, SPS with the biggest name for, you know, any athlete in the world, whether it's fighters or basketball players or football players, they know when they go to SPS performance centers around the world, they have the best of everything there, you know?
No, for sure. Now, we were talking, let's say, about what kind of legacy you'd like to keep. I've known your wife for a while also, Patty. How important is having the right partner with you? I know sometimes things might not be very easygoing, especially when you need to leave on a day where you had to spend with the family, like today. Sorry, Patty. How important it is for your partner to understand your dreams or your goals for you to be able to actually keep pushing to be able to achieve what you want to achieve.
Yeah, that's the biggest one. Yeah, you have to choose carefully who you marry. For sure. If you don't have the right person, all these things are not possible. Because we have, you know, you and me, we have a particular lifestyle. It's not that we go out and this and that or party too much.
Barely go out.
Yeah, we don't. The players are always asking me. Which restaurant I like and stuff. I was like, man, Deliveroo, I don't know. I go out like twice a year. But we're passionate you know, we have one life. We want to make it the best that we can have, you know, build something. And for that, we just work. So it doesn't always feel like work because it's what we love to do. We're building on something. We can see, you see the vision for your thing. I see the vision for my thing. So when you're working on that, it doesn't feel like work always. But for me, especially since I've had my daughter, it's difficult to, my challenge is to balance everything because I can work 24/7. That's the thing, even when I'm at home. Now that's why I have a driver so I can work while I'm in the car. I save at least 2 hours a day like this. But when I'm at home, I'm still on my phone too much, especially these days with all the players here. And obviously that I'm learning as we go. Like
it's never like a straight line. There's always the ups and downs.
I'm trying to improve. And obviously, you know, with Patty, we've been together for like 12 years, which is also the nicest thing because you know, she saw me when I was, let's say, a simple personal trainer. Nobody knew. And I just had dreams and stuff. And she's been there since the beginning supporting me. So it's nice to have, you know, the person on the whole journey like that. But yeah, it's not always easy for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. So usually the way I close, if you want, the podcast, I have some rapid fire questions.
Mm-mm.
So we're going to start with that. Hardest working athlete you've trained?
Sadio Mane.
Okay. And man, like last couple of weeks before the season ended, he was playing like crazy. It's crazy. One athlete you'd love to train, but you haven't trained yet?
Cristiano.
I guess that's all of us.
Yeah.
If you weren't a strength and conditioning coach, what would you be doing?
Maybe still trying to be a pro athlete at almost 40. Good question, huh? I've been a trainer for so long. I don't know. I guess, you know what, before I even wanted to be a physio, I wanted to be a SWAT last year of high school. And my mom was like, no, she didn't like it. It's too dangerous. And I was like, all right, I'll be
SWAT?
Yeah. Well, you get back then, I thought it was like, you know, decent money, and you just, you train all day to be a machine and be the best in the police, you know?
Wow, I had no idea.
It'd be a pretty sick job, no?
No, I think
you
so.
You train, like...
Music in the gym, hip-hop, house, or silence?
Gosh, of course, hip-hop, man. Yeah. Especially old school. Old school. Like, yesterday was a good day. It was a good playlist, man.
Yeah?
I knew all the words, you know, early 2000s yeah. and stuff. All my players had no idea who the guys were singing, Nelly and all that. But yeah, it was good.
And lastly, what do you think is the most... We know there's not a simple, single exercise that works best, but what do you think is the most underrated exercise in the gym?
For who?
For athletes.
For athletes? Football players? Or
yes, any? Football players.
Gosh, it depends on... It depends what they need to work on.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely something strength or power related with the posterior chain, ideally single leg. So it depends what level they're
my
at.
My guy, single leg. Yeah. I love that word.
So yeah. Levels, it depends what level they're at, what their strength is. And, you know, they need to work more on the speed or the strength. Let's say for strength, let's say single leg deadlift, not Romanian deadlift, like single leg proper heavy deadlift.
Yeah.
Or if they're strong enough already, which not too many of them are, it would be some kind of jump with single leg. Let's say hurdle jumps with single leg or something.
Okay. Do you think, by the way, single leg work is something that's very underrated or underutilized in the gym? In general.
Yeah, but it depends, again, on your goals, because there's pros and cons for both, no?
Yeah, true.
I think you love your unilateral.
Of course.
Yeah. For bodybuilding more, let's say more for just looking good, you have to do a lot of bilateral also, sure. Just because you get more adaptations on everything, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're an athlete, 100%, you should focus more on unilateral stuff, yeah.
Coach Nick? It has been a pleasure.
Likewise.
Thank you. I apologize for bringing you on a Sunday morning.
It's okay.
We're sorry to bring you on a Sunday morning. It was a pleasure having you, my man.
Thank you.
My guy.